Welcome to the Wale and Yemi Football Pod.
So, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a different version of the Wale and Yemi Football Pod. For the first time on this pod, I think we're doing like episode... Yemi, how many episodes are we doing now?
This is episode 11.
Okay, episode 11 of the new season, basically. I'm just trying to look at an aggregate. But for the first time in the history of this podcast, we are streaming miles apart. Or we are recording miles apart.
To see how much technology can hit us in our current situation.
Oh, yeah. All right, so big shout out to StreamYard for helping out with this. And I'm hoping that in post-production, we won't have any issues.
I hope so.
Yeah. And trust me, if this works out, man, that's the new...
It's the way forward.
It's the way forward, yeah. How was your weekend, Yemi?
My weekend was same old, except Friday to Saturday morning that I didn't get enough sleep thanks to a church that were doing night vigil, or two churches side by side doing night vigil. And I was caught in the middle because there was no light. So they were making a lot of noise, so I couldn't sleep. So that was the only downside of my weekend. So basically, that's what happened on my Friday. Then on Saturday, the usual work with the kids. Just basically that. So Sunday, I was home at 12.
Oh, wait, yeah, I mean, you're observing Lent, but you're not going to church on Sunday.
Well, I can't remember the last time I went to church.
The mass is not matching.
No, I have a special connection with my God.
Oh. Are you sure it's not that connection, MTN connection?
No, this one is devoid of any human interest.
Hey, my weekend was pretty decent as well. Yeah, they got I'm on TV 3 times a week. So the last day of the week is on Friday. So and that took me to like 10. Saturday I was just all indoor, you know. Sunday out a bit. My sister's child dedication. And what's this thing with when I tell people that I went to my sister's child dedication? I'm like, it was there a party after the dedication? Like, Yorubas don't have the tradition of, you know, doing any massive celebration for the child dedication.
Once it's maybe ceremony that they will do something.
And I it's maybe ceremony, man. Child dedication will just go to
just to go to church to pray.
Exactly. Everybody who I tell yesterday, where the food will carry come, like,
now. Any excuse to do parties, now everybody always fine. You know? So that has kind of led that. And then also, you can't take away the, and I might be wrong, but the Easterners don't do like we do.
Oh, they don't do naming ceremony.
They don't do the child naming. Yeah. So it's the child education that is like their own, you understand? So going to church, then afterwards, they have like this. A small reception, so I think that's where the difference exists between the tribes. So there ends the potential confusion.
Nice. All right, so look like a pretty much decent weekend for.
Yeah, but you did child education now. TV 3 times a week.
Yeah,
the announcement you made on Friday that I had to do giveaway on that was still there.
So why am I supposed to do a giveaway?
To we your fellow stakeholders.
Hey,
you should do giveaway.
Oh, life, bro.
You should watch it. You're supposed to watch
that it. Take life.
So that we can pray for you for a very successful time.
Fake life. By the way, I mean, for those who are probably, you know, getting to know this for the first time, yours truly is now a sporting director at Gailey Rovers. Now, I know Gailey has been in the news in the last couple of days. The communal clash with the military personnel, but I'm hoping all of that is, you know, under control, but that's actually the southern part of Ogele. So I understand that Ogele is classified into Ogele South and Ogele North. So the football club is based in the north, and everything is calm. So I'm sporting director now, and we're competing in the third tier. So that's the equivalent to England's League Two.
League One.
No, League One. It's League One, yeah. It's England's League One. It's Spain's not La Liga Two. Is it Tercera?
Yeah, the Tercera. They call it the Segunda something.
No. Segunda is the second division. Yeah. So, like, the word Spanish means Tercera. Tercera also means like three.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's the Tercera.
Or the Bundesliga's Liga 3.
Liga 3, yeah. And at that level, there are quite a lot of clubs in that level. Now, Yemi, fun fact, the NLO right now has 344 clubs. Yeah.
At least so, those 300 and something. How many will go for promotion?
Out of those 344, that only four will get promotion to the Nigerian National League. That's second division. Get. And that is the way it is also at the Tercera too. I mean, at the Tercera level in Spain, you also have close to 300 clubs too.
Yeah.
So they are being divided into North, South, and all of these subdivisions. So Ugeli Rovers will be competing in the sub-region of Edo and Delta. So in that division, we have, I think, 16 clubs grouped into two groups of eight clubs each. Now, in those two groups, only one team will come out. Now, so once the two teams from A and B come out, from the Edo Delta division, both of them will be involved in the playoff. Now, is that the winner of that playoff will now head to the national qualifier. Yeah. So at that national qualifier, if you can't qualify, you can't enter the Super 8. So it is a, and the intrigue in all of this is, all of this is compressed into 3 months of football.
3 months?
Yes. The league start, the NLO starts April 13, and I think wraps up sometime in June.
God damn it.
So the shortness or the brevity of the league is the reason why the TCC, which is a private league called the Creative Championship, was created. Because clubs at that level cannot survive on just 3 months of football for the year.
No, they can't. It's not a sustainable model.
Exactly. And majority, in fact, I believe that 95 or 98% of clubs at that level are owned by individuals. Mostly private. Yes. And they need to be able to put their players out there, you know, to the scout. So that's why the TCC was created. Now, TCC is now becoming a hot kick now. Because TCC started with 10 clubs. Now it has expanded to 12. And there are more teams who want to join. Because they know it's the platform to be able to put their players on a bigger pedestal. You know, so the league is a very short league. And players cannot thrive on just 3 months of football. So the NLO is a very, 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 long and torturous journey towards stardom or limelight.
So you're going to be frequenting Ugeli a lot more now.
Oh yeah, at least maybe I'm looking at for a start maybe once or twice a month. And you have to be on ground. We have a football development officer who is on ground, who does the daily. Gives us updates, basically, gives me an update. But I'm very much in tune with player contract and everything, like basically running of the club.
So as you say, I can send you one or two players.
No, it doesn't work that way, my friend.
I should not send you one or two players.
No, of course, send them my way, man. If they're good, I'm sure my coach will definitely have great use for them. I hope you also know that at that level, it is semi-pro.
I know.
Yeah, so So you are not expecting a fat salary check.
Oh, have a bow.
It's a semi-pro. You are not really obligated to pay your players in the minimum wage or something like that. Well, getting ready for the unveiling ceremony is on April 2nd. Yeah, it's coming up April 2nd. We also have a sponsor. We have like we already have a short sponsor, but that's under wraps.
No time.
And but so it's basically.
This is more is why you need to watch this thing, Wale.
Yeah, we have a shirt sponsor, and that will even shock everyone at NNL at MPFL level. And it shows that at that level we also mean business.
There are opportunities as well.
I don't know if you caught the news, but last week the NLO itself got over 900 million sponsorship.
Yeah,
although the sponsorship comes in form of kind, it's more of a technical sponsorship. Yeah. And, I find it interesting that the money is not trickling down, but I know it's a lot of money, but it's a money that is spread over 4 years, about 340 million per year. But because of the number of clubs involved, man, you cannot share that money. That money no fit go anywhere. So what they've done is they've shared match balls, merchandise, and everything to all of the clubs. Now the winner of the NLO will get a bus.
Okay. The NLO also has one cup competition that is sponsored by one of the telcos.
There's an NLO cup as well coming up, but that will be after the regular season. Then the NLO also has a technical partnership with SofaScore. You know SofaScore, man?
Yeah,
the Croatian analytics company. So basically, at the point of registration on the NLO portal, every information, every player in the NLO puts up on the portal goes straight to SofaScore. Yeah, so we also put you out there. There's also another technical partnership that is helping clubs to leverage on club website, marketing, and stuff like that. I'm very much welcome to the rigors of Niger. I'm used to it. Maybe this time around I'm playing lead role on it, but nothing in Nigerian football is new to me. I'm used to all of the politics. At this level, you have to be streetwise and streetman.
We wish you all the best.
Oh, yeah.
And hope you get a promotion to the NLL in no time.
Oh, yeah. It can be very, very stressful and very, very frustrating, but let's hope that we are first time lucky.
Very.
I mean, let's hope we are direct fam. Nigeria football. In the top sporting Lagos, we're direct fam, with the background and everything.
Yeah.
But they started from the NNL level,
not at NNL.
At NLO level. So and actually the format for this is also that it's not home and away.
It's
something they call the Stadium League. So all of us in that sub region of Edo and Delta will converge in two pitches and log it out for those or just about 1 month before we find the winner of that sub division and then to the national qualifiers.
I feel for those pitches.
Oh yeah, trust me.
I feel for those people.
But I'm chomping at the bit. I'm looking forward to it. So let's go Rovers.
Well, I know that once the competition starts, you eventually come out with a prediction as usual.
Oh yeah.
We'll wait for whether you tell us who gave the Rovers will win the NLO.
Of course, trust me. And it's a brand new club, so we're starting from the scratch. And scouting wraps up this week. No, we haven't done scouting. We're in training already. you know. But we just have to pick our final, because you can only register 25 players.
Oh, okay.
Can't yeah. And
to play.
And what the NLO has done that I really love. Man, the NLO is, I can boastfully say that the NLO is a forward-thinking organization in the terms of its organization. Now, you can, your 25 players, there's an age limit, there's an age cap. Yes, a certain percentage of a squad, they have to be under 19.
Interesting.
Yes. Then you're being encouraged to have an academy too. So there's the NLO Division 1 and there's the NLO Division 2. Now your Division 2 is what they call a youth league. So if you have an academy site, you can also register them as well. They will play in the youth league.
Nice.
You get. Yeah. It's really for thinking of them, and that's really cool. You know, and even if you are registering all these under 19 players, under 15 players, you also have to provide your NIN.
For verification.
Yes, if you don't provide NIN, you know, they verify anything.
You can't register the player.
You cannot register the player, you must provide NIN.
That's interesting. Yeah. I hope this will eventually trickle down or trickle up.
That's always the problem.
So are you 17 and 21?
That's always the problem. There's no consistency in policy in all of this decision making. Yeah, that's always a problem. But anyways, for our loyal podcast listeners, don't worry, we still got you on the pod today.
Even though. Don't go and collect second wife and who gave you.
But that is a problem.
Don't go and collect second wife and who gave you.
But they're not going to give you H0.
Take notes.
God. They're not give me H0 for Gilly. All right, so there's quite a lot to talk about this episode. But first things first, do we have any families?
Yes, we do. We have a number of fan mails. You want us to take that first? Yes.
Okay, let's do fan mails. I'm also tempted to say that we might just have another special coming up this week. Because this week go long gone. No league football.
Oh yeah, that's true.
We might just do a special on which one of the Euros did France win? I think it's Euro 2000, right?
Yeah, 2000.
Yeah, so might have a special on how France did win Euro 2000. Because that was a very interesting tournament that wrapped up the domination of France on world football.
Yeah, created France's enviable dynasty.
Yes, because I mean that dynasty started with Euro 2000, France 98, Abi.
France
98, then Euro 2000. So they had us on chokehold. So it might be nice to just have a special on that. So that might just take our listeners into the weekend, at least suspense you guys. Yeah.
All right. So our first message. Okay. So we've got two messages from this person. His name is Elias Fad. He says, "Good afternoon, guys." He said, "What's your opinion on the signing of the season in the EPL?" And he also goes ahead to say, "I would love to ask your opinion as regards match fixing in top European leagues, and also Darwin Nunez's wasted chances may cost Liverpool in the business end of the season. Great job, guys." So, Wally, who do you think has been the signing of the season in the Premier League so far?
Okay. Signing of the season in the Prem, right?
Yeah, in the Premier League.
Okay. I'm going to be very, very straight up here and tell you that it's been Declan Rice for me.
I just knew that's what you're going to say.
Yeah.
Very, very so predictable.
No, it's not about being predictable yet. Am I not being objective yet?
Yeah, I've been objective, but also predictable.
No. Because at a point in time, I thought it was James Maddison. You get,
yeah. But any part of Madison got injured. Yes.
Yeah, I think Mads got injured. Then you know, it was not in the conversation again for me. But Declan Rice, apart from the fact that he's hit the ground running, is coming for huge money, but it is how transformative he's made Arsenal. And I mean, Arsenal played this season, and you can recognize that this guy was the missing link between last season and now.
True.
That is how good, you know, Declan Rice has been for the Gunners. So I think that for being sign of the season has to be, you know, Declan Rice. Now, you can also look at it from this angle of value for money. You get
true.
Now, from a value for money point of view, I could say maybe Mohamed Kudus at West Ham.
Yes. Or
but the guy also came in for big money, 38 million.
You can also say Cole Palmer for Chelsea.
Oh, yeah. Of course. Yeah. Cole Palmer as well. But Chelsea, I mean, with Cole Palmer is like a Chelsea is like a blemish in his own record this season. Of course, Chelsea have been like a blemish on the guy, so maybe that's why he does. But he also makes the cut. If I'm going to do a top 10, I'm going to have Cole Palmer in there. Now let me take a look at another potential side of the season here. Yeah, maybe let me see Mickey van der Ven, but there's also injuries to talk about.
Yes, you know, for Spurs,
Van de Ven has been good. I can also mention Vicario Spurs. That is even a legitimate one, sir.
Oh, that's a legitimate.
Yeah, that's a legitimate one. Yeah, it came in for I think about 17 million.
Yeah, from Empoli.
You know, that's it. But see, after Declan Rice, I'm still going to stick with James Maddison.
Yeah, I think.
And I'm going to put him at number two for you.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with that. If I was going to mention my top five, it would be definitely Declan Rice, James Maddison, Vicario, like you mentioned, Obama, without a doubt. I think he's been a bright spark in a really atrocious Chelsea team. And I think there might be one I'm really looking to put who may have slipped under the radar a little bit, and that's probably Wataruendo. Wataruendo at Liverpool.
This year, fair. That's fair.
I think he's also been a very, very, very impressive signing, especially considering those Liverpool went out to sign before going for him. So I think that's another one that should make the list.
You know, with this conversation, there's always the tendency to always want to go with the big clubs too. But if you also look at the lesser size in the Prem, if they stay off relegation, Thomas Kaminski for Luton, I think have also been a hell of a signing.
That's been a fantastic signing. Yes.
Yeah. I think it came from Blackburn Rovers. I like Kaminski has been very, very good at Luton. You know, I have to be very honest. João Pedro at Brighton as well, in as much as Brighton are suffering complications from European football and the Premier League football.
Yeah.
Did you see Roberto De Zerbi's comments last week? He said if he admits that they've not handled it well.
He said
they don't handle that well. Because see, they don't have a big squad. Their key players were playing lots of games, and when he reached the squeaky bum time, they all cracked up.
They didn't rotate well.
So I think we've answered the question, right?
Ilias, that's your response. So we'll go to the next email. Comes from a regular contributor, Peter Ejiru. And we got a message on Spotify as well, so asking us a question. So just a moment. All right. He says, greetings to you, sir, Wale and Yemi, for the wonderful job you are both doing. Please, I want your professional views, sentiment aside, on what Poch of Chelsea and Xavi of Barcelona have done this season, considering the fact that for Poch, his first season at Chelsea, most of the players are new and young. Injuries have really dealt with the club all through the season. Only the Sassi's disaster and Petrovic have not been injured this season. And as for Xavi, it's almost same as above. with all kinds of levers being activated, levers being activated just to sustain the club, and academy players seeing the club through in the last two seasons now. I stop here for now as I look forward to your professional views. Thank you, Peter, for your message from Sue Lele.
Yeah, thanks, Peter. Yeah. All right, so, I mean, let's get started with Poch. He's in the FA Cup semi-finals, so what's looking like the bad season might still turn out to be. In fact, I think they're having a decent season, aren't they?
Yeah, there's a silver lining in the season somehow. You know, Cup final, Carabao Cup final, and now a trip to Wembley. Somehow, there's a silver lining.
Yeah, I mean, but while there's still that silver lining, am I right to say this Chelsea team are still not a serious team?
No, they're not serious. There's just so many things you can put into context on how shambolic Chelsea are. And I think that another thing that doesn't help, two things that I think doesn't help Chelsea is, one, I don't think the coach knows his best 11. And secondly, there seems to be too much uncertainty surrounding the entire team. So why? They suffer from the sins of the past and potentially the branding of the future. So the sins of the past in the sense that once you're not doing well at Chelsea, back under Roman, you get fired.
Right? Yeah.
Now you have a new set of owners who are trying somehow to want to rebrand that they are looking forward to the future. But still, there exists so much uncertainty around the team from a personnel perspective and from a managerial perspective. So I think all those things culminate in what is affecting Chelsea, or what is affecting whatever analysis we can do about Chelsea.
Now, if you watch the game against Leicester, it just helps explain and helps understand that Chelsea are not a serious team. Now, let's do some breakdown here. Chelsea start well. I think Leicester played an open game. You know, they also had their eyes on securing automatic promotion, so it didn't come out that all guns blazing. But they obligingly played an open game. They gifted the home side a lot of opportunity to counterattack.
Oh yes,
you know. Yeah. So Cucurella scores the opening goal, and you know, that penalty comes in the 25th minute. And I know that Poch has never set the penalty taking Ajax in stone, but we know that Cole Palmer has been their penalty taker this season. Mm-hmm. And if you look at his record, he merits it. He has never lost the penalty.
Yeah, he's excellent.
Yeah, he's never lost the penalty. And I'm thinking he's going to take it. And suddenly, Raheem Sterling takes the ball. And if you look at Sterling's previous career record, 8 attempts, 4 goals, 4 misses.
50%. So,
I don't know what compelling case he made to Palmer to be able to convince Palmer to give him the ball to take the penalty. But I can understand.
I guess you can also look at it from the perspective that they already won't go up. So he felt, man.
Yeah, one goal up is not for a Chelsea side. No, one goal up is nothing, you know. But I think that what must have happened is, it did happen for straight football self. Naegon, senior player, former club, mentor, and all these things, gives him the ball, and Sterling makes a mess, you know, of that. And I mean, Chelsea still go ahead with two goals to nil, right?
Yeah,
and we think that they are cruising. And because they are an unserious club, disaster strikes with disaster.
True disaster.
You know, how long I've been waiting for that thing to rhyme, disaster and disaster. But let me even ask you, the disaster own goal, which is the own goal of the season, as far as I'm concerned, was it more of disaster or the positioning of Sanchez? Because I thought Sanchez was way out of position.
It still borders on poor communication. It's the balance of poor communication between player and goalkeeper. It's the balance of poor communication. There's enough blame to share for both of them. You know, to both of them. So he balances purely on poor communication between the goalkeeper and the defender.
You know, so basically, Chelsea allowed these guys back in, and it takes the substitution of Madueke and what's the name of the other guy?
Kani Chukwueze, the Chukwuemeka.
Yeah, basically, all these Travis Scott people.
Yeah.
Takes it from. They take it from before they run out 40 winners. So, I mean, that game itself just helps you explain where Chelsea as the football club.
Yeah.
They cannot keep it together, you know. Which is the very bad, but they get Man City in the semi-finals, so
and they fancy their chances. Two games already, both have ended in stalemate. So definitely, yeah. They fancy their chances, and you need to see how upbeat, you know, the average Chelsea fan is with that draw, you know. So hey,
all right. So that's the Poch part of the fan mail. Now let's talk about the Javi part of the fan mail.
I would rather you take the Javi part because somebody has accused me that I have an agenda against Barcelona. And I don't understand where that notion is coming from.
All right, so for Javi, I don't know what he has done, but since he has announced that he's leaving.
Yeah, performances have been on the up.
So since Javi announced his departure, Barcelona unbeaten. They played 10 games, they're unbeaten. And, you know, some could say that it's due to the fact that there's a bit of pressure now released. There's no pressure anymore on the manager. The players also, you know, no pressure. They are playing with a bit of free will. But his announcement also has coincided with what looks like an injury crisis at the club. And I think Xavi has managed it really well because the La Masia guys have really come through for him. Now, against Atletico Madrid, you know, how dare you go to Atletico, a place where these guys have not lost at home this season. In fact, you know that in retrospect, after that Barcelona game last night at the Metropolitano, I just learned last week that it's not even the Wanda Metropolitano.
No, yeah, the naming rights.
Is that the Civitas? Is it Civitas Metropolitano?
Yeah, you know, so the naming rights expired.
After the game, it just sprung to mind that Inter missed a massive opportunity last week in the Champions League.
They did.
Because this was an Atletico side not playing some good stuff. In fact, Atletico came into that Inter game having lost to the worst side or one of the worst sides in the league, Cadiz.
Yeah,
now. And you were in a good position and still let it slip. And yes, Barcelona coming to town and dropping an emphatic victory.
So
apart from Kubasi, there was Hector Fort. Hector Fort is the right back at La Masia. But because of the injury crisis, they put him for left back. And he was really good yesterday as well. Who else again? All this Fermín López.
Yeah.
And in his moment of need, La Masia has really come through for Xavi. Ilkay Gundogan is back playing. I don't know if I told you a few weeks ago that in the top five leagues in Europe, Ilkay Gundogan has created the most clear chances.
Yeah, you mentioned it. He's
Barca's best player. I know Lamine Yamal has been good. But Gundogan is Barcelona's best player right now. They cannot do without him. That's how good he's been. And suddenly, our friend Lewandowski also is back scoring. he has like 8 goal involvements in his last 7 games.
Yeah.
He's scoring. The smile is back in his face. Joao Felix also has a way of just playing well against the big side. The big game player, by the way.
But can we talk about Joao Felix and how for me, he has not lived up to expectation on the basis of the talent that we believe he has and on the amount of the financial outlay that has led to his move from Benfica to Atletico Madrid and now to Barcelona. His best league return was last season. 8 goals, Wale.
Mm-hmm.
He's at In 6 fact, now. That's terrible.
Yeah, very terrible. I think that his Barcelona record in terms of goals and assists, it's not that enviable. Maybe he has like maybe 10 goals or something, or 9 goals.
He's on 6 at the moment in La Liga. And his best return was last season with 8 goals.
Yeah, I think he has 9 in all competitions. But the thing is that his goals carry a lot of weight.
Yeah.
And that's why I called him a big game player. Yeah. Now, this Atletico game, home and away, scored against them.
True.
Against Porto, that crucial Champions League game in November last year, he scored in it. You can never fault the fact that he shows up in the big games. And against the lesser sides or decent sides, it tends to be able to disappear. I remember against Villarreal, against Girona, it disappeared. In fact, halftime, Javi come out. And here's the problem with João Félix. He's in a position where his parents' club don't want him back. Barcelona also don't want him. In fact, the word from Barca is that if they are going to make any funds available for a permanent transfer for any of their Portuguese players on loan, it's João Cancelo.
Yeah, yes.
You know, Cancelo wasn't involved against Atleti. I think he didn't make the trip due to personal reasons. But the word from Barcelona is that Cancelo is even first in line if they're going to make anything permanent.
Breaking news.
Yep, what's happening?
Nottingham Forest have been given a 4-point deduction.
Oh, yeah, their PSR, this thing was due today.
So they're going to drop it to the relegation zone below Luton.
I think I'm going to get my Luton prediction right, though. I think they'll still. I told you now at the beginning of the season that Luton will stay up.
Yeah, you said so.
Yeah, I think they'll stay.
But not under the circumstances.
No, nothing concerning.
Nothing concerning.
Hey, but here's the thing for Forest. There's still about how many games? 10 games to make up for them.
Yeah,
it's about 4-10 games to make up for it. And hope you also know that the financial fair play rules in Europe has changed.
Yes. So that the Premier League are
They call it squad cost.
Mm. So that the Premier League are now trying to adopt that now.
Oh yeah.
Move away from their PSR. In fact,
that is coming in from next season, I believe. Yeah, even UEFA started it. They are only just facing it in gradually. I think they are 70% facing it right now. You know, so squad cost is basically your revenue.
80%.
Yeah, 70%. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But all of that still favors the big team.
Yes, of course.
Because now they make the most revenue you get. And then they make the most revenue. You know, but back to João Félix we're talking about. So, like I was saying, it's the situation where Atleti don't want him back. And you know that before he went to Barca on loan, he extended his contract to 2029.
Yes, at Atleti.
But based on the reception that guy got yesterday, almost, I don't trust anybody want him. And the guy even went to the media to demand that move to Barcelona. So it looks like he has burnt bridges with Mione too.
Of course, he's burnt bridges. There's no chance.
Yeah, unless Mione come for that club. And trust me, this Mione, now they 3.0 down.
3.0.
Yes. Yeah, Mione, it's 3.0 down. His 1.0 was his first time.
The two Champions League final.
No. His 1.0 was that Europa League phase, Falcao.
When they won the Europa League. So the 2.0 is which one?
It's 2.2 is Champions League run.
Champions League
plus La Liga.
Okay, plus La Liga. Okay, you put that.
Yeah, because it's 2 La Liga. I mean, don't be 2 La Liga, you mean?
Yeah.
Then it's 3.2. Is this sexy football where they want to play?
This one. Is this sexy
football? If you carry the enter semi-final, quarter-final champion.
Quarter-final champion.
Yeah. Even in this 3.0, there's still no place for, João Félix.
No place
because you are still required to work hard, and that guy is not a hard worker.
I can't see where he fits in into that team at all.
Yeah. So Barcelona also don't have the finances to be able to keep that guy.
At all.
So I don't know how both of them are going to work it, but another loan looks likely.
Yeah.
Another loan looks likely. But I cannot fault the fact that it shows up in some of the key games for Barcelona.
True.
Is the problem you don't want to have.
So
I think that should do it on Porter.
Yeah, that should answer Porter, Adewale Bello, another regular listener of ours. Okay. He says, good day, Mr. Yemi and Mr. Wale. First of all, thank you so much for the jersey. You are the best. So it was the first winner of our jersey giveaway. So I can only say I'm a two-time winner. Okay, yeah, he also won the Astimin giveaway as well. The Yorubas used to say, may we not know what, though, because I always anticipate Monday night. God will continue to bless you and the works of your hand. Mr. Wale, the best. Whatever you add to your voice, don't remove it, though. I listened to the pod like 3 times before the next episode. It's just that we are a proud Arsenal fan. With regards to the audio, I also hope for improvement, which I get, and I also pray for the pod because I see it going places. More sponsors, and when we're going to start getting, when are we going to start getting videos? I have a lot to say, but I'm angry. Remo is just playing badly. Their peers are doing great. No away wins since God knows when. They are not convincing at all. See Rangers. I want Remo to win the league, but the way they are going, I don't know. Same for Wrexham. Feeling the pressure of promotion battle, you had back-to-back home games. What did they do? Lost one, drew one. Those are the two teams that give me joy. Since Manchester United is always making me sad. Well, the beauty of it is Manchester United will give you some small joy yesterday. So thank you, Adewale Bello, for your mail.
Wale. Oh, yeah, Adewale, this is your Wrexham concern. I hope it's not because of your coupon, child.
You said that they give her joy.
But they actually, they're having a tough time in League Two. But see, it was not expected to be smooth, you know, for Phil Parkinson's side. They will get it, you know, because they got promotion from non-league to League Two doesn't mean they have to get promotion to League One. Really? Don't be surprised. Yes. They probably spend about 2 seasons there before they can crack it again to League One. It's always difficult, you know. True. It's very difficult. Go and ask the FA Cup semi-finalist, Coventry. Coventry's biggest moment in their history is winning the FA Cup in 87, I think, against Spurs. But the crucial year for them in their history was 2001, when they got relegated from the Premier League. They have not been back since then.
At all.
They have not been back since then. That's how poor it can be. I mean, Coventry at the point in time almost slipped down to League One or League Two. You know, they didn't have a stadium. They had to play like third fiddle in that part of England. You know, so that they have to get Villa, Birmingham, and I think one more club. So it's been really tough for them.
Yeah.
Really, I think they've suffered. They've suffered their promotion heartache too.
Yeah. Remember that they also invested a lot of money in that stadium, the Ricoh Arena.
Oh, yeah. Now,
hope that they're going to get promoted back to the Premier League. But that's more. I think they actually sold the stadium.
They sold the stadium, so it's not very easy. Yeah, but they are enjoying some good times. So I think last season they brought some good money for Yorkres and what's the name of this other guy? Forgotten. But they sold Yorkres for good money to Portugal, and even their 2 goals scored against Wolves. By the way, I got some money on Coventry to beat Wolves.
Oh, how many? Yes,
it was like 3.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was like 3. And here's the backstory. Wolves came into that game with a lot of injury problems.
Yes.
Forward line.
At the same time, on a good run.
Yeah, it's a good run, but at one point, you go max out. You get. The front line of Wolves are right now non-existent. Wangi-chan, Matheus Cunha, nobody is available. Even Sasa Kalajic on loan to Frankfurt, down on suffering an injury for Frankfurt. Fabio Silva out on loan. They have nobody up front. Neto also is out for the season. I think Neto is out for the season too. With hamstring. You know, so I just felt like Coventry are going to take advantage.
And that's somebody they were looking to potentially cash in on.
Yes, no. Yeah.
At the end of the season.
So the 2 goals crossed for Coventry were bought with the money of Yorkres too, you know. So,
Remo
Remo, so I predicted they're gonna win the league, right? And honestly, I think I have to backtrack on it. And here's the reason. Here's the reason. If you want to win the league in the MPFL, at this point in time, you should be able to at least do the basics. Now, are they doing the basics? I think they are. They beat Ayimba in Ekene last week. It's not a main feat. But you have to be able to do runs. You have to be able to go on runs. Yeah. Because if you can't put together a good run, and when I mean a good run, a winning run.
Yeah.
The MPFL is a league based on good runs. Take a look at the table right now, Yemi. Just check your laptop. Every team in the top 10, at least 5 of them have done runs. In fact, let's even make it top six. They've gone on runs. Do you notice who is six? Do you notice who is sixth on the table?
Who's six? That's
Shooting Stars are sixth.
Shooting.
Now, look, how many points separates Shooting and the top of the table, Lobby? It's six points. Who would have thought that at any point in time this season that Shooting Stars would be 6 points off top spot?
Yeah.
But because they've been able to put together that run, look at Rangers. Rangers are second. They went on a five-game winning run.
Rangers are beating last nine, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. Remo Stars have not been able to put that together. So they win here, they go there and lose. They win here. And that was betraying of their ethos at the beginning of the season when they were picking bits and pieces away from home, if you remember. So in
10 games, Rangers have the best form in the last 10. Shooting have the best form in the last 5 in the MPFL currently. In fact, in the last 15, Rangers have the best form in the MPFL in the last 15 games.
Mm-hmm. You see, and the likes of Lobby also are in good form, you like it or not.
Lobby are just hanging on.
I agree with you. Lobby are hanging on, but they are picking things away from home.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. All those away draws, we've been picking those away draws.
If they sustain them. But yes, Remo can be good at home, but away from home, they are not picking things. But here's the lifeline for Remo Stars. They have a game in hand.
Yeah.
That game in hand, I think, is against Rivers United.
It's Rivers United. Potentially, yeah. Potentially second.
And I think that game is in Port Harcourt.
I think Remo at home.
Okay, is it Kenny right? If they manage to win that game, it puts them back 1 point behind the tabletop.
Yes.
Yeah. So that is the only lifeline they have. So I'm not convinced yet, but they can still win it, but it's going to be very tough. It is going to be very, very tough. Now, what I've taken from the MPFL. You hear me?
Yeah, I'm with you.
So here's what I've taken from the Nigeria Premier Football League. And I mentioned it on my show this morning on radio. Now, you can say that no team is significantly better than the other.
Yes.
I don't know if it is good for the league, but I think it should be good for the league. But no team is significantly, you can't look at Enyimba and say that they are better than Rivers.
No, you can't.
Lobby Stars who are top of the table are not significantly better than Remo Stars or Shooting Stars.
No.
So the quality is evenly spread. That you look at the top six and they're only separated by 6 points.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is, I think, is a good thing. But at the point in time, it would really, where you find this, you know, as a negative, is when your teams now go out there continentally.
Mm.
Because they are not significantly better than the other, their quality starts showing. The lack of quality starts showing continentally. So that's why Lobby Stars will not be able to slug it out with USM Alger. Lobby Stars will not be able to slug it out with Orlando Pirates. I'm not even mentioning the Crepe de la Creme yet.
In fact, you don't need to go far. Rivers drew USM Alger.
And the body language is like morning mood. So you have to look at the pros and cons. I like what the table was showing right now, but is it a good sign for the league on the bigger scale, on the bigger level? You know, can we say Lobby Stars, who are top of the table right now, can easily mix it with Mamelodi Sundowns? The answer is a fat no. Yeah, have you seen the quarterfinal draws for the CAF Champions League?
I saw the teams there.
No, the CAF Champions League. The teams are mostly from Southern Africa and from North Africa.
True.
Take another look at the CAF Warrior Cup and you only have maybe ASEC and them Lobby Stars and Rivers United.
Yeah, it's from West Africa.
Even the clubs from Southern Africa have taken over.
No, they have. They have.
You know, there's a club from Mauritania. Is it Nouakchott?
Yeah, that's part of why we're praising Mauritania and the work that FA president has done, you know, in the last few years since he took over. You know, You see, the guys in Southern Africa, when you're talking about development, they've done an exceptional job. Wale, they have a Kusafa Beach Soccer Tournament going on right now in Southern Africa. That's, they are developing the game across board. Across board, not focusing on one side. No, across board, from youth development to domestic players, to national team, to main national team, beach soccer, women's world, across board. Those are people that they know what they are doing. They have a plan, and they are sticking to it. See, so, Baba, what's happening?
Bottom line, the league is looking good. Remo Stars are not really convincing. I think that Shooting Stars game, it's a derby, man. You have to show up, and I mean, they didn't show up. But credit to Shooting Stars. Did you see the crowd also was good? Yeah, it was an evening game. Crowd was really good. You know, they turned up. Remo need to do more, man, if they want to win this league. But
yeah, they need to do more.
All right, do we still have any more fan mail?
Yeah, we have one from Jide Adewumi.
Okay.
He says, good day to you, Mr. Emi and Jaya. It brings me a great pleasure to write you for the first time this year. I've been enjoying the episodes on the pod on a weekly basis since we entered 2024. And the quality hasn't waned. Well done to you, and may God continue to bless you. I'm sorry, I will take us back to the night of February 11, 2024. It was my birthday, but the Super Eagles ensured I didn't close that day on a high with their loss to the fans of Cote d'Ivoire. So I need you to teach me what Xavier Alonso has been doing with Leverkusen that Pesero did not do to win us the AFCON despite deploying the same style. Please note, this isn't about the AFCON, but the tactics deployed by Pesero and Alonso, 3-4-3 and 3-5-2. I'd like to know the difference between Pesero's setup and Alonso's setup. If it is personnel, please let me know. The Eagles just had 6 matches to win the tourney with the formation, but couldn't do it. But here we have Leverkusen guys doing it for more than 30 matches, because I must acknowledge that they've tried other formations this season and they've not lost any in 37 as of today, Saturday. So I guess that's 38 games now. What is Alonso doing right that Pesero didn't do? I've been thinking about this for weeks now. So thank you, Jide, for your mail.
Okay. Yeah, so it's now 38 for Leverkusen, right?
Yeah, 38 for Leverkusen now.
Because they beat Freiburg 3-2.
Yeah,
3-2. For Sunday.
Well, the first thing is very simple. Personnel differs. That's one.
Of course.
Personnel differs. Know-how differs.
Let's even talk about personnel. Talk about personnel. They have Grimaldo. They have Grimaldo and who's the other
and
guy?
Frimpong.
So who do we have? They play.
Zedus and Lucy are the line.
They play.
In midfield, they have Granit Xhaka.
Yeah.
They have Robert Hendrick. They have Florian Wirtz. We have Alex Iwobi and the tank, Frank Onyeka.
See, you can't even see that. That's not a conversation. It's not a that conversation is a no-brainer.
Yeah.
It's a better personnel. Then even the coach comes from a better school.
Of thought, yeah.
Or his education is much better than Josep Pesero is. Yes. Is from the old school. This guy learned from the feet of Guardiola,
from the
Mourinho, Carlo Ancelotti,
and Rafa
even his father. In Papa Seven, I'm a midfielder.
Yeah. So, there's a difference. And league football is different from tournament football.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
The amount of time you have, people need to also understand that the amount of time you have with the national team is not as much as the amount of time you have with the club. So he has about 2 months in preseason to perfect his ideology, his style. The personnel is a cross-section looking to solve different problems. So mm-hmm. He has the luxury of being able to go into the market to solve a particular problem. But for national team, if you don't have a player born from your country that can solve that problem, you can't go into the market to sign somebody to solve the problem. So you're already handicapped by way of place of birth or nationality. Application is another different thing. I think that Leverkusen are very possession-based. They also work on a lot of tempo and also are very front-footed. Nigeria and that person were more pragmatic with a little bit of counter-attacking involved. So same formation in context, but not in application.
All right, so I like today's five fan meals. They practically have read into our rundown and they're helping us our rundown.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Should keep up with that. Keep up with that energy.
Yeah. So I think we have another. We have another family. He's someone that's written to us before. Is Demosha? He's writing from Hydra, Greece.
Where is that?
Hydra in Greece.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he says hello, Wale and Yemi. Nice to write to you again. Now that Pesaro is gone, I think it's time we look forward and address the shortcomings of Super Eagles. The recent list of invited players shows the level of laziness and lack of forward thinking within the technical team of the NFF. Why, for instance, is Zoha and Ojo getting invited when Adebayo and Okoye will provide better quality and competition for Wabani? Why is Kenneth, Awazem, Yenacho, Sadiq, Osai still getting invites when we can actually provide opportunities for the likes of Ifeanyi Matthew, Ibrahim Olaiwola, Gift Oban, Ebenezer Kaode, Michael Folorunsho, among others? It just baffles me that we spend a lot of time. Hold on, my phone wants to do that. We spend a lot of time wailing and not making any concrete plan to execute. We expect magic at the end. Was thinking the euphoria around the Nations Cup will make NFF realize the opportunity they can, a lesson especially from Nigerians within the diaspora community, willing to spend that disposable income to support the team during proper tournament once the team plays well and show commitment. Also, what is the force about Amuneke? I think we just like selective amnesia and allow disaster strike before we react. Amuneke hasn't shown any sound coaching or quality anywhere, but we want him to take charge of the Eagles. Same guy that couldn't qualify the same Osimhen set for the AWC or add anything meaningful to the team when he assisted the Guavon last time. Will suddenly become prime pep if he takes over. Did the under 17 achievement surpass what Manu Garba accomplished? Why is Manu Garba not getting linked to the job also? With the issues of suggesting topics, like I said, bringing likes of Wale Agbede, Solis Chukwu to discuss Bibles, suggest that kind of approach and best players for positions is the way to go. Also, as a Man City fan, I wonder how that is. I can authoritatively tell you the team's drop in quality from what Gundo and Myers used to provide is a major problem this season. Arsenal can't win the league because they can't win at Emirates, Spurs and Old Trafford. So Ali, dead the dream. Keep up the good work. Demosha from Hydra, Greece.
All right, big shout out to you in Greece. What's the name of this vacation destination?
What's that place? So Santorini.
Santorini. Hope you are riding to us close from Santorini. Hey, it's big shout to you. So first things first, see that Osai Samuel, he has the invitation for life after what happened this weekend. What he can tell you? Invitation for life.
What is it?
Yeah, for life.
That was serious.
So that's to find for life new. You know, because what he did was really, really was massive, was brave. You have taken on that that useless
that hooligan.
Yeah. And once again, it just helps explain where their football is right now.
Oh, well, that you know, talk, is talk, all,
Yeah.
He's all over the place.
The hooligans are like, it's really crazy. It's really crazy.
Yeah.
Now, Tuamunike, I don't know if you've seen this, the report, but it should be announced this week as coach.
Tuamunike.
Yep. Then Manu Garba is under 17.
Interesting.
Yeah. But Finidi will take charge of the Ghana and Mali friendly.
Oh, okay.
Now, Finidi also will be his assistant, according to what I'm hearing.
Okay, so breaking news, Ali, from the top source.
The feeling is that the next coach is going to be Nigeria and it's going to be Amunike. So maybe our writer is not convinced of the choice of Amunike. But the technical committee and the technical department, which Amunike is a part of, I think. Right?
I think it's
part of the technical department. Yeah. So they seem convinced. It's been in the fringes for a very long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I would legitimately ask him, what has he been up to? Like, what? You know? Because it's been a while I think his last job was a Tanzania job now.
Yeah.
Yeah. His last proper job was the Tanzania job. You know, so, but.
Concerns.
Yeah, of course. Of course. I had the opportunity of talking to Michael Nsien, the guy from the United States.
Oh, okay.
That applied for the job.
Yeah.
Yeah, the guy is. Nsien is the under 19 coach of the US national team.
Are you serious?
Oh, yes. See, these are people we need to involve in our football. But we don't think like human beings.
No, we can't.
So I'm not saying this because I was on TV on Thursday or Friday, and Michael Nsien was interviewed, and I had the opportunity of asking him a couple of questions. But by the time he expressed himself and I went through his mind, this guy is young, this guy is forward thinking, this guy even has got what it takes to be able to solidify a relationship between U.S. soccer and Nigeria football on a technical level. You like it or not, the technical department of the U.S. soccer is 100 times better than football.
So, is that even up for? That's not up for debate, no.
Exactly. You know, so there are a lot of people like this. Even if you're not going to give him the job, you have to embrace people like this into the football ecosystem. Now, Michael Nsien, in case you don't know, used to be the coach of the under 16 national team for US. After that, before that, he was coach of FC Tulsa. You know FC Tulsa, that popular club for
America. Yeah, I know FC Tulsa. What was it called? Can you play for that team now? Mfondo.
This Aqua United boy.
Mfondo.
Naim facilitates Mfondo come FC Tulsa.
Uh-huh.
Yes. You know, Michael Nsien played, he was involved in our qualifier for Athens Olympics now, football.
Oh.
Yeah, he didn't make the cut.
That's Yasa now.
Yes, O-Force Yasa.
That's O-Force Yasa now.
O-Force Yasa, the Madifemi Olubayo.
Yeah.
He just didn't make the cut. So he coached FC Tulsa. In fact, last year, he was still assistant coach for the U.S. national team to the Gold Cup. Now, so when people like this apply to be coach of Super Eagles and you don't want to give them that opportunity, you can still find a way to get them involved. I know this guy only wants the top job. I mean, this guy is not going to be content with an assistant coach. But there are some times when you can make this. You can take leftist decisions. That's what they call it.
Yeah.
You take decisions that shock the whole football fraternity. And you say, this is a decision that we have done to be able to safeguard Nigeria's football for the next 10, 20 years. Rather than doing the old Amunike dance again, just do something fresh. You know, but...
Yeah, we can never do that.
When I took a look at this guy's CV, man, this guy went to Man City last year now for all these exchange programs to learn basic, to learn all these global business practices and stuff. He met with Kausley, you know Leo Kausley now, this former Everton guy, who is coach of the under 20. And now, the guy get UFIA license. What else do you want? He has a UFIA license. And he's young. In fact, he's the youngest of all of the applicants.
Well, he will not be able to enter our politics.
Yeah, of course. So, you know, sir, I asked the guy, waiting, wait, what really happened? Can he break down where we got it wrong at AFCON? And he basically just said the right thing. He said the truth. We have too many attacking players and we didn't play to their strength. We play to the strength of our team. But I'm wishing whoever becomes the next coach the very best of luck. Most likely, I'm going to come finish it. And, Olise SF saying, well, he said he wants to coach the team too.
Yeah, I read that song and I was surprised.
Yeah. And Vincent Ayamatu said he's ready to serve his country. Everybody shall want to serve.
They're not looking to kill him again.
Yeah. Hey.
What is it called? One final message. We got this on Spotify.
Oh, is that mail again? Are they just coming?
No. This one is on Spotify. Just a message on Spotify.
Okay.
This is from T Boogie, who's another listener of ours. You guys give me footballing joy all the time. Please, can you discuss the different Super Eagles eras, starting with Senegal 92? Because that was the first AFCON I watched from beginning to the end. So thank you, T Boogie. We will put that into consideration, as Wally has said that.
Don't you think that is special?
Yeah, that's why I said that is special.
Yeah, that's special. So that's basically, special. I think we owe you guys two specials. We have this and the one I mentioned earlier on, the Euros for France.
Yeah, Euros.
Yeah. Okay. So
thank you for the mails, the messages. Yeah. We really appreciate. And I want to also say something critically. Shout out to the guys listening to us in Russia and Canada. Thank you very much. Please keep spreading the word. It was nice to appear on the charts, Russia and Canada. And I have to say
the title of this episode is Fan Love.
Yes, Fan Love. Yes, Fan Love. Let me write it down before I forget.
Now, Fan Love. It's really great.
But this fan love, it may be the Bible too for us.
If us sweet now. If I look only day for Russia, we they just finish election. Just celebrate Putin for us. God. Alright, so guys, we are like appealing to the board now. Yes. Let's get started with Manchester United. Yep. Let's do Manchester United. And before the game, your manager, Erik ten Hag, he said we need to save our season. And somehow, anyhow, they found a way to do that. But will that be enough for the future of this manager?
I don't think so. I think the only thing that can save his season would be if he can win the FA Cup. That could give him a stay of execution and potentially still finish in that Champions League place. Those are the only two things that can give him a stay of execution. Despite the win yesterday, which has given us giving Manchester United fans and even fans generally a feel-good factor and what have you, the performance itself, a lot of question marks. United are too easy to play through. That is a consistent problem this season. And that's a coaching problem. And if all of us are seeing it, I can't understand how the manager, has not seen it and looking to solve that problem. Your goalkeeper can be subjected to making the 80% saves. 80% of the shots he takes, he saves about 80%. You can't continue having that. That means very soon you are going to be on the back of a hiding. And it will be as bad as the 7-0 United got last season at Liverpool. So yesterday could have been could have been a disaster. By the time they got into second half, Liverpool leading by halftime, look at the chances Liverpool missed in that second half. There were some 5v2s, 4v2s that Liverpool felt that it was unconscious of Liverpool not to take those chances. So, still question marks. But still good factor. It's nice to be going to Wembley for the semi-final. It's nice to have the young boys being the ones that put United through for the tradition and whatever of the club. But I'm sorry.
Yeah, but for the neutral, yeah, I mean, that was a modern classic.
Oh, yes, no doubt. Huge classic. 4-3.
Yeah.
I will comfortably compare it to 99 when United needed a late winner for Ole Solskjaer in the FA Cup at Old Trafford against Liverpool. So it was a classic. And it was quite symptomatic of this weekend. You know, the classics, aside Manchester City and Newcastle. And somehow has given the FA Cup a bit of a lift, you know, with the kind of games we had from Coventry and Wolves on Saturday to Chelsea and Leicester yesterday before the United game.
Now, yeah, I mean, let's talk about the guy who has got to United here, and that is a very unlikely source, Amad Diallo, who is Ivorian, by the way, but wasn't at AFCON. Now, Amad Diallo joined from Atalanta, right?
Yeah, yeah. For some big money.
Like 40 million?
Yeah, somewhere.
Joined for some big money and has been found out on loan to
Sunderland.
Places like Scotland and Sunderland.
Yeah.
You know, that was only second goal for Manchester United, which everybody about knows by now.
Yeah, I think the first one was against AC Milan in the Europa
League. Milan in the Europa League.
Under Ole. Yeah.
Now, I wanted to ask two things. Two things here. Do you think he should get more chances at United? I know injuries have played a part. Then there's been a lot of players above him in the pecking order. Then number two, he got sent off in that game. Now, should players be booked for taking off their shirts? Because see, we know this rule. This rule has been in place since 2004 and is one of relatively few unambiguous laws in the game. Take off your shirt after scoring and it's a yellow card. His first yellow card was for blocking a free kick for Liverpool, by the way. You know, but I know that on a cold clinical level, no sympathy for Amad Diallo yesterday because he did the crime. And he's supposed to do the time. But on the other hand, I think it's a stupid rule because it is punishing genuine displays of emotion when such things are being increasingly squeezed out of the game. And fundamentally, you know, you are trying to stifle moments or nature of moments such as a man. That's what I think.
I agree with you. I've had a problem with this rule forever. In fact, if you watch the replay of that goal, you will see that after he took off his jersey, he realized that, I'm on a yellow card. He tried to sneakily put on the jersey back. If you notice, but the ref had already seen him, right? I think it's a stupid rule that needs to be reviewed. I understand the rationale behind it. Trying to score political messages that could be put on jerseys. But players still find a way to spread those messages. You know, they don't need to really take off their jersey before they can show what's underneath their shirts. You understand? I think that is important.
But there's a theory that the shirt sponsors don't like. Because
yes, there's also
the high profile moment of the games, they are not visible. If a player takes off the shirt.
Yes, I agree with you. And that's another thing. But still, you cannot take away the emotion. You can't take away emotion from the game. It is a critical scoring a goal. Like I remember, you remember during the Women's World Cup, the criticism that came for Asisat Oshoala from a certain quarter.
Yes.
And I told someone, I said, if you've ever played football, the raw emotion that comes from scoring a goal is unimaginable. You can't box it in. You can't cage it. You can't restrict it. So you have to let these players be able to express themselves, from express the joy, showcase the joy of probably scoring a winning goal, even putting your team ahead. Imagine a player like Ahmad who hasn't scored for United all this while. Just those, that raw emotion for him.
Yes, sir. I want to score the winner 121st minute.
You know,
Papa, go come on my boxers.
somebody in one of my group said, God, I think it was Toby Samuel in one of the groups that said, God help them, that if he scored that kind of goal, that he will shoot himself naked. Let us
yes, sir. Yeah, I mean, do you know what it means? A guy from Ivory Coast scores the winner that takes United to the Wembley at Old Trafford.
Yeah.
Ah. Yeah, I mean, that's raw emotion that IFAB is trying to just to stifle, basically.
No.
But no, I've come up with a solution here. I have a solution here, Yemi.
What's the solution?
So maybe we should add some subjectivity here. Because let's say that if a player gives us a Ronaldo moment, now, this is what I mean by Ronaldo moment. You remember that Champions League final? Where yes. The team not the lead 3-0. You got commotion. So if you put your goal has put your team 3-0 up like in the 60th minute and you take off your shirt, we can find you. We can do it if you like. But in a high octane moment like that of Amad Diallo, maybe they shouldn't be booked.
No, I agree. I think you need to wait the moment. Just the same way referees always avoid giving red cards early in the game, you know, where a rough tackle could happen 5 minutes in.
Yeah, and it's the spirit of the game.
Yeah, like, no, let me not spoil this game too early by giving a yellow card or even a sending off. You know, that discretion should also come in times like this.
Anyways, credit to United. I thought they played some good stuff, especially the second half. Liverpool overran you guys.
No, I think in the first half. I think the first half was when I think United played well. That second half, I think from 35th minute, Liverpool were you know. Klopp will look back and, you know, he will rule some of those changes he made. I think those substitutions of taking out Salah, Luis Diaz at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure he would have looked back and said, maybe I shouldn't have done it. But then at the same time, was United on the ropes? He probably looked at his team and felt, we've won this game. This team is not about to say. That's why we love football. Stranger things always seem to happen.
Did you see the video where Klopp walked out on the media?
I saw the interview.
Yeah, I think it was in the Norwegian outlet.
Yeah, that was a sign of a manager that was truly frustrated.
They asked him a very simple question. Well, did your team, were they getting tired at the point in the game? And that guy won at two.
He kind of alluded to it by saying, look at the number of games you play. United have had 8 days to prepare for this one game. You know. But hey.
You know that somehow, some way, this whole quadruple thing was going on in his head, and he was hoping for a fairy tale. All right, so let's talk about Chelsea, and we already spoke about Chelsea, you know, when we got that fan meal. But I wanted to quickly ask you about, like, what do you think is next for Raheem Sterling? He just can't seem to crack it these days.
Yeah. So if you look at the landscape of the Premier League as it is today, I don't see any potential takers. Not even considering how much money he earns. I think he earns about £350,000 a week. So no takers. So maybe the riches of Saudi Arabia might just be next for Raheem, because the bulk of the majority of Chelsea fans already want him out. They're not happy with his performances. They're not happy with his contribution. So maybe it's time to look for a new challenge for the English international, maybe also consider international retirement, because he just can't seem to convince Gareth Southgate to give him an opportunity.
Yes, yeah, speak of Gareth Southgate, yeah, let's just do a sharp detour. What has been your own understanding of the situation between Southgate and Ben White?
Okay, so first of all, with Gareth Southgate, I think it's very simple.
Okay, I want to believe everybody knows the backstory to this Ben White situation, right? Or should we apply some context?
Apply some context.
Okay, so here's the backstory. National team manager Southgate invites players for the friendlies against Brazil and I believe Belgium. And he invites the likes of Ben White, Jarrad Brandt White, you know, doesn't extend invitation to Calvin Phillips, who's having a stinker of a season. No, but Ben White declines the invitation without no reason. And the press is asking Southgate what could have happened. And he said the player just requested not to be, you know, invited. He says he's not available for national team. And he also goes on to say that he wants to debunk any story that there was an issue between player and Steve Holland, who is the assistant manager. Because there has also been stories making the rounds that during the World Cup in Qatar, you remember that Ben White left the World Cup?
Yes.
Yes. There were reports that there was a clash between Ben White and Steve Holland, and Southgate took the side of Holland, and that led to the player leaving, and he dismissed it or marked it as leaving for personal reasons. So here's the backstory here. So you can go on with your thoughts.
So, you know, there are a number of things we can put into consideration there. One thing that I know about Gareth Southgate is that he's a coach or manager that rewards loyalty. So he's very loyal to a section of players. Like, irrespective of how well or how poorly you are doing with your club, you get a call up. He has kind of bucked the trend this time with Calvin Phillips. You know, but that's because I think his hands are completely tied in this matter. That even when the man finally gets to get a run, he's been doing badly. So I think his hands are tied. But look at the instances of players like Harry Maguire, who he's remained loyal to. Fikayo Tomori is another one who can't seem to get a look in at all, even though we know that at the moment he's suffering from injuries at Milan. So the Ben White instance also can be applied into this case, that he probably felt that, look, maybe in the case of the rift between Ben White and Steve Holland, maybe Ben White took too much of a hardline stance in wanting to leave camp and making a huge, bigger issue out of what Southgate may have considered as not being a major issue. But Ben White is also at a point in his career where he's actually playing well, in a team that is doing well. So the flip side could be, you could say, he doesn't want to be distracted in any way or form, having to now start chasing down a position for England that is going to be potentially difficult for him to get. Like it or not, England are blessed with right-backs for this. There's Kieran Trippier, there's Kyle Walker, who I do think are number one and two in the pecking order for right backs, depending on how England decides to play. And Ben White, in this context, might be number three. And then he looks at it and says, why am I wasting my time going to an international gathering where I probably will not get to play? Probably not get a look in. Let me focus on what I'm doing with Arsenal and see where that takes us. If we can have a successful season, you know, without me being getting instruction on international football, fine. And I think I probably agree with that in this context.
Okay, all right. So that's all gone. I've always felt that Ben White, he knows send the national team. And see, Ben White is not a football person. Ben White last year was talking to the media on one of those rare occasions, and see, he doesn't even watch football outside of football. He doesn't watch football. He only plays the game. Is your Benoit Asuekoto, who will probably be an insurance broker rather than playing football. So these kind of guys see national team football probably as extracurricular activities, and they'd rather not just be bothered. But I also want to believe that something happened in Qatar.
Yeah.
Definitely. Something happened in Qatar, and you are still, I mean, both manager and player are still undergoing that strain. You know, but I think England are well covered. They won't miss him. He was never part of it was never a mainstay of their team. So that shouldn't be a problem. All right, another one from the Premier League weekend where there were scarce games. Was Spurs failing to score for the first time in 39 matches? And who would have thought it was going to be against Fulham?
Well, I think the major talking point does be that performance by Fulham to get the better.
Yeah, I mean, that performance was good. Do you know that since February 1, Robert Muniz has now scored the same number of goals as Saka, Foden, and who else again? I know those two. That's the form Robert Muniz is in right now.
And he's not a striker anybody gave a second look.
Oh, yes. Don't give a fuck about him.
Yeah, when Fulham brought him on as well. Like, who is this one? Yeah, so sometimes it's just about getting a run of games and the manager having confidence in you. So I guess that's what...
But there's been this... Arthur Robinson has been great for them.
Oh, yes. I think as a team, Fulham have been good of late. But, you know, finding that consistency is a big problem for them. But you have to look at these two performances, the one at Old Trafford and now this one at Spurs, against Spurs at home, will probably be their best performances of the season.
All right, let's quickly get to the Serie A because the big game was late last night. A coupon buster, by the way. A massive. I was on hand to guess how much I wanted to win. 330K.
Like
330K. Inter to win.
No, I think Inter is still suffering from that hangover of losing to Atletico Madrid. After they went ahead.
You know why that Atletico Madrid game hurts me? I'm not an Inter fan, but just like Napoli did last season, and even already De Laurentiis has been saying it, that he felt it was a missed opportunity for Napoli not to have won the Champions League last season. And I fully agree. Aside from Man City, Napoli were playing the best brand of football in Europe last season.
True.
The team that won, that got to the final, Inter, finished that season, I think, 18 points behind them in the league. Milan that knocked them out finished 20 points behind them in the league. It was a massive opportunity thrown. And this iteration of Inter, I think, are better than last season I got to the final.
Yes. Yeah.
I think they're a better version. And I think they should have cashed in on that and at least made another run towards the final. And guess what? He is in the round of 16. So and things like that are very hard to shake off from your system, where you have Napoli coming to town in a couple of days.
But I think that the comfort of the lead that they have at the table will eventually get them to snap out of it. But looking at that game critically, once Inter went ahead, they seemed to struggle through the game. They were creating chances, but just couldn't finish. Then subsequently, they led Napoli back into that game. And from a consistent basis, Napoli kept pelting at them, and the goal was going to come. So, and at the same time, I don't want to start making the excuse that maybe there's a level of fatigue hitting the team, but I've seen Simone Inzaghi make some interesting changes, you know, of late in the last two games. And I hope that it doesn't derail the progress that they've made so far.
Yeah, but the Inter-Napoli game was marred by the racial allegation on Francesco Acerbi. Did you catch that? Juan Jesus.
No, I didn't.
Juan Jesus spoke to the referee. I think it was after he scored. He had an altercation with Acerbi and had to report to the referee that it appeared that Acerbi called him a Negro. You know, and that took the shine of the game. But after the game, when Jesus was interviewed and he says, see, what happens on the pitch stays on the pitch, the players apologized. And, you know, once the referee blows the whistle, everybody moves on. So apparently something happened, but he's treated it as water under the bridge. But the footballers of the Italian footballers still, the Serie A law still suggests that, you know, Acerbi should be punished. So we don't know yet if they will take it up. But that was a magnanimous response from Mane Sosha, you know, escalator. So
also ex-Inter.
And by the way, Inter poorly defended that corner kick that led to that Mane Sosha goal.
Oh yes. And then also it wasn't supposed to be a corner.
Yes, actually.
It wasn't supposed to be a corner.
Actually. I'm all these tiny margins, Sha.
Yeah.
quickly, Roma. Where's this little to Roma? Share our own win league. Oh, is it a do Roma?
Ah, Baba, No, they want to be, they want to confirm the Champions
they've League. They've taken this sack the manager too seriously.
I'm telling you, they take our personal.
By the way, on sack the manager, did you see the latest one that went down and it's producing results?
Which one again?
Celta Vigo.
Oh,
Celta Vigo. Sack Benitez. They came from a go down to meet Sevilla.
Just sack the manager.
Sack the manager. See Marseille too. We already talked about Marseille now. We've talked about Marseille. Yeah, but I think Marseille have done back-to-back losses now.
Well,
Europa League and the French League.
Yeah, but that Europa League, it was as good as one.
You get. The French leg. You know. So please sack the manager. It's only Sporting Lagos that is betraying me now. only Sporting Lagos that is betraying me right now. But this season, just sack the manager and everything starts working.
Yes, sir.
By the way, you saw what happened in the West Ham Villa game, the longest VAR check in Premier League history.
Yeah, 5 minutes and 7 seconds. The second goal, yeah.
The potential the winner goal, for West Ham.
Baba, see this VAR thing, just take it as they give you.
What do you want?
Just to give you.
All right. Yeah, quickly, your thoughts on the quarterfinal. I want your predictions. Any predictions? Quarterfinal Champions League.
Ah, very tough. Oh. Tough to predict any of the four ties. Atletico Dortmund. You know, Atletico, you don't know what you're going to get. Dortmund, too, you don't even know what you're going to get on those ones, too. So it's a Jekyll and Hyde combination.
Yeah, but those two have got two of the most iconic European match centers. I want to enjoy football.
Yeah, West of all, Signal Iduna and Metropolitano. Well, that one I can't call them. PSG Barcelona. I don't know. 250 goals for PSG so far for Kylian Mbappe.
Yeah,
maybe Fireberry, the hatchet with Rike. I think I'm going to be sticking out my neck for PSG to get through on that one. Arsenal by Munich, that one, because you don't know which by Munich we're going to get at that point in time. And the same by Munich on history from an historical perspective, are favorites. But Arsenal are playing some fantastic stuff at the moment. That one I cannot call, but my bad Belé obviously will tilt towards Bayern. the Man City Real Madrid, if there's a tie I did not want to see, is this one. I do not know why they had to bring these two together at this point in time. But City have had a good run against Real in the last few years.
Yeah, but there's a feeling that Real Madrid are more equipped this season for Man City.
But at the same time, Baba.
Baba, see, the trouble matter is Vinny is on fantastic form. And when I looked at Vinny going to that game, now Vinny has gotten four consecutive yellow cards now in La Liga.
Yeah.
He got one against Osasuna. So he will be suspended for their next league game, which is coming up in 2 weeks after international break. Coincidentally, it is that game that Jude Bellingham returns.
Uh-huh.
Right? So, Vinny misses that game and is fresh for Man City. Bellingham also comes back and is fresh. He's in match form.
Yeah.
So, I think that two of your best players arrive into that City game, man, in good shape.
My only consideration can only lean towards Bad Bele. So, for Real Madrid to win. You know.
I still think City wins, Sean. Make I not do analysis.
I would like Real Madrid to win that. So Real, that's off the cuff. Real, PSG, Bayern Munich for Bad Belesic, and maybe Atletico Madrid.
All right. Anyways, hope you know that the 8 teams in the quarterfinals, only one of them did not vote for this European Super League, and that was Dortmund. So this is still like a Super League of sorts. Well, yeah.
You can look at it from that perspective.
European Super League, but no Super League.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. Anyways, we got to run right now. And I also saw what UEFA did with the Europa League. Separating Liverpool and Leverkusen until the final. It go make sense. It is well. All right. So I think that during the week we're gonna get you guys our specials on the Super Eagles as was requested from our writer fan mail there, and we'll do something on the Euros as well. Yeah. All right, hope you guys enjoyed this episode, and thank you very much for sharing and subscribing. Continue to send us fan mails. We'd love to hear from you.
Ciao, ciao.
Bye-bye.